I was really starting to like Ryan. As I was getting to know him this week for the very first time, and our relationship was really starting to blossom into a really great friendship, and then he said, older preacher. So we've taken a step back now, as I remember many years ago hearing the comment frequently about my preaching, you know, you're going to be a really good preacher one day. And I would hear that from time to time, but what's wrong with my preaching now? And sure enough, I would talk about that, and I'm here already. Well, old Brother Mock was really good in his day. So whatever happened in the middle there? Time passes so very swiftly. I see Captola over there shaking her head, and she's 93. The mention of the passing of Lee Ashbrook. I remember when I was at Gardner Lane, him being here, and how I regarded him back 25 years ago. And it's been great to renew acquaintances with people that I was close to 25 years ago. And to be with you and to meet some of you for the first time. I've been talking to Ryan and the elders, Randy Kirby, about the things, the ingredients that you have in this place to really thrive as a congregation of the Lord's people. I'm going to be praying about that. May the Lord abundantly bless you as you continue to do His work in this place in your time. And realize that our God can work powerfully in your life. Do you believe that God is working powerfully in you? Thank you for how you've encouraged me and you've helped me this week. I'll go home and I'll be absolutely exhausted. Daniel was asking me if I do any Sunday through Friday meetings. I did a couple last year and a Sunday through Thursday. I've got one in a couple of weeks that's Sunday through Thursday. I don't know how the old preachers used to do it. When every meeting was Sunday. And then I hear about 2 week meetings. Seriously? They had to each gain, what, 10 pounds every meeting? But I want to thank you all for your kindness, your hospitality, how you've encouraged me. And I'll go home and I'll be tired. But I will get up to preach on Sunday morning, Lord willing, with a fire and a fervor that will come from the days that I have spent with you. It happens every time I go hold a meeting somewhere. I would simply ask, as we conclude and as I depart, Lord willing, in the morning, that if you would remember me in your prayers to our great God. I always ask the churches where I preach to remember me in prayer. Now, I know how this goes. 3 years down the road, well, we had this meeting several years. I can't remember what that guy's name was. I know how this goes. But for as long as I can get more of the Lord's people praying on my behalf, it is only going to help me. And so I would ask that of you as I depart. Thank you for how you've listened and you've encouraged me this week as we have talked about living the dream. God with you, you with Him, that is life indeed. And that is eternal life. And that's living the dream. If I can in some way enhance your walk with God by the work that I have done this week, then that is exactly what I've come to do. I read a book several years ago. Actually, it was from the fella who helped me write the manger sermon that I preached on Sunday. He's a good friend of mine that preaches in San Antonio. His name's David Osteen. And it's interesting, when I re-preached the manger sermon at home a couple of weeks ago. I broke it into two parts, and I wanted to revisit some of those thoughts because our congregation had changed so much. A few of the people remembered the older version. But I mentioned David Osteen as the one who had inspired those thoughts initially with me, and he had written a bulletin article about it, and I just turned it into a sermon. And little did I know that a couple had come in late as I was preaching that, and it was his mom and dad. And they're sitting there, he just mentioned our son from the pulpit. And so my friend David Osteen told me about this book. He said, Tony, you need to read this book. He said, it's not a religious book. He said, but there are all kinds of religious overtones. And it is a book by Simon Sinek that is very popular in business circles. It's called Start With Why. And he talks about companies that are successful, one of which is Southwest. It's my favorite airline, flying it tomorrow. Southwest Airlines, he talks about Apple. He talks about the Wright brothers way back when. And he talks about people who understand their why and how critical that is to business success. You've got to know the niche that you're in, the place that you serve. And I think that's so true of us as Christians. We need to know our why. And we always need to ask ourselves that question when we are assembling with the Lord's people. What are we doing here? Why are we doing it? What are we trying to accomplish? What is our why as God's people? And so I take you to the final thoughts of this meeting. I want to take you to a single verse in the New Testament. I want you to mark this verse well. I want you to memorize it. I'm going to try to help you with that tonight. I want you to make it your anthem. It is a verse in Hebrews chapter 10 and verse 35. As the Hebrew writer says, therefore, do not throw away your confidence, which has a great reward. Now, one of the neat things you can do with PowerPoint is you can color code something. And so I've broken down this verse in its three major parts. Number one, do not throw away. That's what this lesson is about tonight. Do not regard as not having value. Do not treat as garbage or rubbish. Do not discard, do not throw away your confidence. Not just your godliness, not just your spirituality, not just your religious exercise. Do not throw away your absolute trust in the reality of God, in your trust that this is your Creator's message to you. Your confidence that the message in this book is true and right and brings life and betters your existence. You need this. Do not throw away your confidence and know this, it has a great reward. Great is your treasure in heaven. Jesus would say, as he talks about the Beatitudes in Matthew 5, 3 through 12, blessed is the individual who is poor in spirit. It begins in Matthew chapter 5 and verse 3. May I suggest that you connect the Beatitudes to the great promise of Abraham in Genesis 12, when he says, through your descendants shall all the nations of the earth be blessed. That's the recipe that Jesus is throwing out in the Sermon on the Mount. This is the blessed life that is contained in that promise. I was reading a while back about that term blessed, and I wish I had time tonight to go through beyond the Beatitudes of the Sermon on the Mount. Throughout all the times, there's several of those in the book of Revelation. Every time you see the word blessed in Scripture, my Wisdom Wednesday post today quotes Acts 20 and verse 35, it is more blessed to give than to receive. Anything that follows that term in the Bible, you need to pay attention to. Because the idea of the word blessed is, oh, the bliss of. Oh, the bliss of those who pursue those qualities. Great reward. How many adjectives could you use to describe the reward of the faithful? What is awaiting us as we exit this world as God's people and arrive in the next? What superlatives could you use? It is a great, great reward. Far greater than anything you will be able to carve out for yourself here. I promise you that. And so we must not throw away our confidence because it has a great reward. Do you have it memorized yet? I was reading this verse several years ago, and something struck me. This verse actually is a hinge. This verse in the book of Hebrews stands on a precipice. It is a concluding thought for everything that has preceded it in the book, and it is a springboard for everything that is about to follow in Hebrews. It is the hinge. It stands on the precipice of the entire message of the book. Well, what have we seen? The Hebrew writer is addressing Christians who are struggling. He warns them not to neglect their great salvation. In Hebrews chapter 2 and verse 3, he warns them of wavering hearts of unbelief in chapter 3 and verse 12. He warns them not to be sluggish, but imitators of those who through faith and patience inherit the promises in chapter 6. The previous chapter in chapter 5, he says, by this time, you should have been more full grown than you are. You should be teachers, but you're still in need of the milk. You're not ready for the solid food like you should be. You should be teachers by now. And so he's dealing with some Christians who are struggling and really hints at it again in chapter 10 just before. You started well, but be careful. One of the things I like to add here about the book of Hebrews, I do another sermon on the book of Hebrews called It's Hard to Be Lost. In fact, there's a sister that lives about 45 minutes from me who said years ago, you need to preach that sermon everywhere that you go. And she's a little disappointed that I'm not preaching it anymore. But I want to tell you, after you've preached a sermon about 20 or 25 times, you got to move on to other things. So I'm going to incorporate it here. One of the things that the book of Hebrews is doing for us is suggesting that there are so many things working on your behalf. You have so great a salvation. You have the ministry of angels. You have the great cloud of witnesses that we will see in just a moment. You have the work of Jesus, your intercessor. All of these things are working on our benefit. I know from our vantage point, sometimes we look, it'd be easy to be lost. But there is so much going for you, the Hebrew writer says, that it's actually hard to be lost if you just tenaciously cling to the promise. And so, this is the hinge. Here are the problems that his audience, problems that they're dealing with. And from this, he launches to those who were inheritance, who did receive the inheritance of the promises, who blazed the trail of faith, the examples of faith in Hebrews chapter 11. Don't think for a second that Hebrews chapter 11, that the story of faith starts in verse 1. The story of faith goes back to this verse in chapter 10 and verse 35. And then he says in the last verse of chapter 10, we are not of those who shrink back to destruction. We are of those who have faith to the preserving of the soul. You are not of that ilk, he says. You are not of those who shrink back. Yes, I know. Hebrews 10 clearly denies the doctrine of once saved, always saved. I understand that. But this is a very practical point the Hebrew writer is making. Don't let your struggles cause you to jettison faith. Do not throw away your confidence. That's not who you are. I know you're dealing with some stuff. I know faith can waver from time to time, but you stay at it. Because there's so much going on your behalf. These individuals who blazed the trail of faith before you, they weren't superheroes. They were ordinary men and women like you who chose the life of faith and did valiantly as a result. They accomplished extraordinary things, and you can too. Why set them as examples if we cannot attain to what they accomplished? But one of the things that the Hebrew writer is telling us all the way along is we have Jesus as our high priest. He sympathizes with our struggle. He is able to come to the aid of the tempted. Hebrews chapter 2 and verse 18. And then in my favorite verse in chapter 7 and verse 25, it says, he ever lives to plead our case, to make intercession for us before the throne of the Father. And he is able to save forever those who draw near to him. More on that in a moment. And so the point that the Hebrew writer is making about our confidence is that our confidence is in him. We need relationship with Jesus. We need to know what he is, not just what he has done, but what he is doing on our behalf. This is not what he's done in the past. This is what he's doing now. He sympathizes with our weakness. We can go boldly to his throne of grace and find help and, thank you God, mercy in a time of need. And if you'll keep walking the walk of faith, keep walking with God as we talked about last night, he is able to save forever those who draw near to him. And so this concluding admonition tonight, why is it that so many find themselves in the dark, dark place of giving up? We've got to hang on despite everything, despite anything and everything. We must lay aside the sin that so easily entangles us and all the encumbrances, and boy, there are a bunch of those, and run with endurance the race that is set before us, fixing our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy set before him endured the cross and despised the shame and is set down at the right hand of the majesty on high. You see, Jesus is the ultimate trailblazer for the faithful. And so we must not, because of our great King, because of what he has done and doing on our behalf, we must not give up. We must not throw away our confidence. I say this everywhere I go. Do you have an old directory at the house? Whether it's this congregation, if you were here 5 years ago, you don't even have to go back that far, but I'm just throwing out 5 years. Here or wherever you were 5 years ago, get out the directory. I'll tell you what you're going to find. You're going to find the names of some people who have gone on to their reward. who were faithful all the way to the end. Be like them. But I'll tell you what else you're going to find. And nobody has ever proved me otherwise when I've said this, not once. You will find the names of people in that directory just 5 years old who are not serving the Lord any longer. Now that's a tragedy. They've done the very thing that the Hebrew writer says we must not do. They've thrown away their confidence. Oh, some of them might recover, but a lot don't. Now, the really frightening thing to me about that is this. Let's say the Lord allows this earth to stand 5 more years, and the year 2024 rolls around. You know what statistics would suggest? That somebody here tonight, and maybe several somebodies, will no longer be serving the Lord in just 5 years. That's why I'm preaching the sermon. You must not let that be you. And that's going to be completely your determination. It's not going to be the result of anybody else's determination. Don't you wish, elders? Don't you wish, Brother Ryan, that we could force people to do the thing they need to do for themselves? But that's not how this works. It is completely your choice whether you are going to throw away your confidence or not. And when you find yourself in that dark, dark place, whatever the circumstances that cause it, you must not surrender that of ultimate value, your confidence, which has a great reward. So why? Why do people throw away their confidence? Several thoughts and we'll conclude. I think a lot of people give up on the Lord because God seems very, very far away. All I know is that Paul said the Lord is near. In Philippians chapter 4 and verse 5, the Lord is near to the brokenhearted. I mean, that's a constant refrain in the Psalms. God is our refuge. Even in difficult times, when David is saying, no one cares for my soul, in Psalm 142, he knew that God cared. When Asaph is decrying all the evil around him, God is the rock of my heart. The nearness of God is my good. The saying is now almost trite. It's been used so often, but it is still true. If God seems so far away, who moved? You need some help with this? Go to the book of Revelation. It was gloomy. Christians were suffering. Blood was being shed. Family members were being lost. Antipas, my faithful witness, was martyred. The souls are crying underneath the altar, how long, O Lord? And the point of the book of Revelation is, no matter how bleak it looks in the world, Jesus' kingdom triumphs. Jesus' kingdom survives. Jesus' kingdom is the apple of his eye. You are the apple of his eye. No matter how alone and how hurt you may feel. Okay, I don't know why I'm doing this. I just bring them up in random order. When I fill the screen, I'm done. Some people give up because life is full of pain. Pain is a great factor in so many people. Whether we're talking about emotional pain, probably the greatest of the painful factors that cause people to give up on faith, some emotional struggle, spiritual struggle, physical pain. I know some people who are in pain every day of their lives. And that's hard. Some of you talk to me about getting older and the pain that you have to deal with as you get older. I'll tell you though, we have something that the Apostle Paul did not have. We have Advil. Do you think Paul could have used some Advil from time to time? Be thankful for Advil. When I get a headache, I can knock it right out. I know it doesn't fix a lot of things. It doesn't fix severe things, but it fixes some little things. And look, when we're in pain, don't lay that at God's feet. So many people say, God, why have you allowed me to be in this pain? Why is there pain in the world? Is it not because of the introduction of sin that we read about in the book of Genesis that brings forth death? One of the reasons why pain is rampant in our world? And I don't know, but haven't we contributed to the problem in the fact that we have been sinners? And so let's not lay the problem of pain at God's feet. Let's lay it where it belongs, at ours. And just be thankful that it's temporary. Some people give up because of marriages that are troubled, that end tragically at times. Marriage is not a fairy tale. Oh, it was meant for man's good. It was not good for man to be alone. It was not meant for your misery. But just like people have free will and choices as it regards evil conduct, it takes two in a marriage. And I want to tell you men something, because this is particularly a problem of men. We like control. We talk about men a lot of times. It's not just men, but we talk about men a lot of times as what? Control freaks. I want to suggest something to you. There's only one person you can control in a marriage, and that's you. And when it comes to your responsibility in this relationship before God, you have a responsibility regardless of what your spouse decides to do or not do. And whether they pursue love or not, it is my obligation to pursue love. So I say, oh, that sounds very vulnerable. What do you do if you love and love is not reciprocated? You say, now I know how Jesus feels. Because he gave out of his love for everyone. And by percentages, so few respond in kind. I know it's vulnerable. But focus not on how your mate is failing you. You focus on what your responsibility is before God. And it can have its challenges. Learn the principles of Christianity by the way you behave and talk and think in your home. It is probably the greatest proving ground of our faith. Some people give up because the church is not utopia. I hate to mention this so close to where it happened, but I think I did mention it Sunday about a thing a 14-year-old shouldn't see. Ugliness in the local church. A day I'll never forget, where because of sin and ugliness, a severe situation unfolds in the local church. And you've seen it here. You have seen brethren not behave as brethren. You have seen brethren not love like they should. But I'm here to tell you that does not invalidate the message that Ryan and the elders are preaching in this place. It doesn't mean that this is all a bunch of hooey because some people struggle to live what they've been taught. I've struggled at times. I've sinned with my tongue before. So why do we expect everyone else to be perfect and give ourselves a pass? Sometimes things escalate in local churches and people basically lose their minds for a time. This is people. We are people who all bring flaws to the table. And an imperfect past and sometimes an imperfect present. And so just because the church isn't the ideal society where everyone always behaves and everyone always plays nice, doesn't mean you should surrender your faith. You know what? I'm not going to worship there anymore because there are hypocrites there. Well, listen, you give up on your faith, and I'm going to tell you where you're going to hang out with for eternity, and that's with hypocrites. They're going to be all over the place, and worse. Some people give up on faith because worship becomes stale. Interesting, I preached this point several sermons ago, several gospel meetings ago, and I had a lady get really upset with me. A sister got really upset with me and said, "Our worship should never become stale. I can't believe you said that." I said, "Well, I agree. It shouldn't become stale, but I'm here to tell you it does with some people. They find themselves just going through the motions. No, it shouldn't happen, but it happens. I'm just going through the motions. I sit here and sing the songs. You ask me 5 minutes later what I sang. I don't know. My heart wasn't in it." And sometimes you're just really tired. Okay. And you're going through some things. You didn't sleep at all the night before. Okay, sometimes it's a struggle. But if it's always a struggle, if you always find yourself going through the motions, may I suggest something to you? Think about this. Every time you walk through these doors or wherever you worship regularly, every time, we get so distracted by the people and the conversations and all that takes place in the building. But something absolutely must happen when we're here. We have got to get what we do in this building out of this building. I've got to make sure that what I'm doing here in the pew is directed to the very throne of the living God. I've got to get it out of this building. Yes, I know we sing to one another, but first and foremost, we sing to God. And somebody else is leading the prayer, but that is my prayer to God. And the lesson that I'm hearing preached is directing my steps so that I can be pleasing to God. That'll take care of the stale problem when you're singing the songs and you're actually feeling the sentiments that you're singing as you sing them to the great King. Some folks give up on faith because, and we're going through this quickly now. Some people give up on faith because they say, this bothers me. I talk to a lot of older saints who are really not sure if they're going to heaven. And if that's the case, I don't think we've preached the gospel right. I understand when Jesus said some hard words about rich and how hard it is for the rich man to enter into the kingdom of heaven in Mark 10 on the heels of the rich young ruler who has just walked away because he had great possessions, and he warns twice about how hard it is for a man with riches to enter the kingdom of heaven. The disciples asked this question, then who can be saved? It's a good question because you know what? You and I are very rich. We're in the upper 1% of the richest people in this world. Did you know that? Some say, well, somebody else makes more money than me. You are still at the very worst, probably, in the upper 3% of the richest people in the world. Did you know that? Oh, well, then who can be saved? That's a legitimate question. And then Jesus answers what? With men, it is impossible. But with God, all things are possible. Can I tell you something tonight? I am not looking into the eyes of anyone who is incapable of going to heaven. Everybody here tonight has the wherewithal and the capability of going to heaven by your faith and the help of God. That's what Hebrews is telling us. But there is the problem of sin. And it can be very inviting and destructive. I used to play golf when I lived in Baytown, where I went after I left Louisville. Was there for 12 years. I would try to go out every Monday morning and play golf with an older evangelist in whom there was no guile, my good friend Jack Thompson. We played golf until he could no longer play. His daughter still worships with us at Decker Prairie. I love Jack. Taught me so much about how to live, how to be a godly man. I would walk 18 holes with Jack early on before he couldn't walk the course anymore. And we would walk 9 holes. And I was younger then, so I could do this. I would go into the clubhouse after 9 holes and I would buy a Snickers bar. Can't do that every time I play golf now. I would get a Snickers bar and off we'd go onto the back 9. And I will never forget the day where I walk in and there it was in the new shiny silver and red and blue wrapper, the Three Musketeers bar. And I said, I'm going to get a Three Musketeers bar today. And I started walking down the 10th fairway with Jack and got halfway down and said, I wish I'd bought a Snickers. Got this in the mail in Baytown. It says, resident at 2309 Kipling, Baytown, Texas. Some kind of offer. Sparkling hand car wash. I like to wash my car every now and then. I like to keep a clean car. My dad taught me that. Oh, this is going to be pretty good. I look on the other side. Can you see that in the back? It doesn't matter where you're sitting. There's nothing on the other side. What an offer. It's a blank yellow card. You know what this is? This is the devil's offer. Promises so much, delivers so little. Heroes. I think I missed a point about the journey being so long. It's not that long. Michael Phelps, who's your hero? I just go with Olympians here. You know what's cool about Michael Phelps? If he was a country all to himself, he'd be 37th on the all-time list of gold medals. That's how cool Michael Phelps is. And then I got to mention the girl who's probably the greatest gymnast ever to live. Some are saying that. Simone Biles, she's from Houston. The Shaun White guy, he can do some things in a pipe that are extraordinary. The girl that swam like a fish in the last Olympics. Just some of the Olympians. I'll throw in a non-American just because a guy that can be the fastest man in the world for a decade, that's pretty impressive. And your name is Bolt to boot. How perfect is that? Fastest guy in the world for 10 years, name is Bolt. Who's your hero? Two of my most favorite athletes, maybe they're not the greatest guys, but I appreciate what they can do. And that's LeBron James and Tiger Woods. I love watching them. I hope Tiger does well at the Masters. I love to watch him play golf. I like Jordan Spieth too, but I have heroes. Who's your favorite singer? You like Adele? Oh man, what a voice. Let me tell you who the greatest heroes in our world are. I'm looking into their eyes tonight. The greatest heroes in our world are those who have confidence in Jesus Christ and who live by faith in Him. We sometimes don't see it that way. We admire the lifestyles of the rich and famous, or the truly spectacular, athletically gifted people, or those with the velvety voice who win American Idol, or whatever. But the truly great people in our world are those who do not throw away their confidence, which has a great reward. Memorize it. Make it your anthem. Do you possess this confidence? Are you walking in the will of God? Look at the verse that follows. For you have need of endurance, so that when you have done the will of God, you may receive what was promised. Where are you on the journey? Maintain your confidence. Endure to the end. He who endures to the end shall be saved, Jesus says in Matthew 24. Months ago, I was in Tampa, Florida, visiting my mom and dad. And I got a phone call at 10 o'clock at night from one of our elders, Mike Moriarty. And the phone call started like this. Tony, Wayland has been killed. Wayland was one of our elders. He had met at the building that night with some of our members to deal with a matter. And as he was pulling out of the church parking lot in front of a railroad track, a guy came over that track, a drunk driver doing 75 miles an hour, went airborne and hit him in the driver's side door, and he died instantly. We are still reeling from the loss of Wayland Melton. But one of the last classes he taught was a new converts class where he talked about being a police officer early in his life and about the perils of being a police officer. And he told those new converts, he said, "You know what I figured out? You just have to be faithful today. You don't have to worry about down the road, months from now, years from now. You just have to be faithful today." And that's so true. None of us knows what's around the corner. You just have to be faithful today. I was visiting with J.R. Bronger up in Indianapolis a couple of years ago. And he was telling me about running many marathons. I know some of these guys, your elders, they run, crazy sorts that they are. And he was running a mini marathon, and he had met this guy at the start of the race. And he said, the guy said, this is my first marathon. Oh, cool, great. And so they take off and go, and as he gets done, he sees this guy. And said, well, how'd you do? He said, you know, when I started out, everything was going great. I was running mile marker to mile marker. But then as the race wore on, he said, then I was going from stoplight to stoplight. And then as we hit like the 10-mile mark, I was just running from block to block. And he said, at the end, I was just running from crack to crack. And you know, that's how we run the race as a Christian. We just run from crack to crack. And we keep running. Do not throw away your confidence, which has a great reward. You know, I started with Rogue One, the Star Wars movie several years ago. I'm going to finish with that. When K2SO is bringing the ship to rescue as they're getting out of prison, you know, to escape the planet that's blowing up. Are you there, K2SO? Yes. And he comes in the ship to rescue them. And he says, there's a problem on the horizon. There's no horizon. And so it is, ultimately, with our lives here. There will be no horizon, but there will be an eternal home. In the presence of God, where there is fullness of joy and pleasures forever, and you don't want to miss it. There is nothing in this world worth missing that. Are you subject to the invitation of our Lord? Do you need to respond in faith to the saving of the soul this hour? Do not hesitate. Embracing Jesus and His will brings joy, brings reward, brings glory. Embrace it this hour. Let's stand and sing.